handle the truth.
Should we or should we not follow the advice of the galactically stupid?
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
You're all a bunch of fucking assholes. You know why? You don't have the guts to be what you want to be. You need people like me. You need people like me so you can point your fucking fingers and say, that's the bad guy.
Clearly, don't know who you're talking to, so let me clue you in. I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot, and you think that of me? No. I am the one who knocks.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Righteous Prick Podcast. I am your host, J.L. Covan. It is 3:48 p.m. Eastern Time on Sunday, May 15th, in the year of our Lord, 2022. Now, I had made a pledge, I forget on which feed, perhaps on the Patreon only, but I said if I record one on the Patreon the day after the special taping, it means it went horribly wrong. If I tape one on the regular feed, which is what this is, it means it went well. That was a lie. I just felt like more people would be curious, even though I obviously want people to sign up for the Patreon. I didn't want to deny you the recap. But I'll give you a blow-by-blow soon enough. I just got back from seeing Everything Everywhere All at Once, which I think is a copy of the Sky Rizzi movie, Nothing is Everything, which is about a multiverse of all the different versions of the Sky Rizzi psoriasis commercial jingle. The first one was the best. Every other one has been an atrocity. No idea why they went to a new song. But I just saw that movie. I went for a walk. It's sunny out in Jersey. Trying to clear my head. Went to Mass this morning. That didn't really help. And went for a walk, went to see a movie, and just, you know, it wasn't bad. So I'll say that off. I know, and there were some great ad-libs and some new bits that really killed, like, since the last taping, things that I inserted because I knew they'd kill, not just because I thought, oh, this is kind of fun, let me put this in. But there were mistakes on my part. No disrespect to the people who I'm extremely grateful that showed up. People flew in from Iowa, Chicago, came up from Pennsylvania. DC, you know, real diehard. I had a term that I used derisively many years ago called a fran, which is a fan that tries to become a friend. But in this, you know, since the pandemic and social media and getting older and more isolated as a person, I think of it more as a term of endearment now. That there are a lot of people who have invested a lot of their time and money and support in my up and down comedy career. And I'm extremely grateful. But in the aggregate, so this isn't calling out any one individual, but the crowd in October was, I was an A+. The crowd was an A+, which yielded an unprecedentedly great show in my career. Last night, I would say I was somewhere between a B+ and an A-, probably veering towards B+ with some A highlights. But and the crowd was a B, and that part of that is because there were like 40 fewer people in the crowd. So obviously that's going to impact. That's no one's individual fault. But I'll give you the blow-by-blow for the whole day. But it's been... I don't know. I'm hoping that this feeling does not last for too long, because I feel devastated is probably too dramatic. I mean, yesterday Britney Spears lost a baby, and 10 people were gunned down by an 18-year-old racist piece of shit in Buffalo. So it's, you know, it's unfortunately you sometimes have to make yourself realize that your comedy show is not the most important thing, obviously. But to me, for my career goals, you know, for things I've dedicated my adult life to, it represented a tremendous disappointment to me yesterday. Had I not had the October show, I don't think it would be a disappointment. I think I would be like, that was good. There were some great bits, and I think that's going to make for a solid, if not solid plus, special. But, you know, I think it's definite that the first taping will be the album, so that's good. And this is a friend of mine came up to me after the show and said, I thought you were just going to do the whole same set again. This was like a totally different show, and which felt good. Because it meant that, like, people who came twice, which there were several people who did, got a different experience, a slightly worse experience, but still a very good experience. But in terms of, you know, this was always a long shot for me. That's why I was so excited with the first taping, because I said, it guarantees nothing. But if I do an A-plus performance and have an A-plus crowd, I can live with that. Because if they don't pick it up, if nobody buys it, I go, okay, well, this one's not on me. I can live with this. It confirms what I think and know about the industry, and I have nowhere to blame myself or my fans. So that would be a good position to be in. Worst case scenario, nobody picks it up. It's just on sale on iTunes and Amazon. To say, I did the best I could. This is a great product, and, you know, various factors played against me that I had no control over. Whereas this one, I felt like I didn't not try to give a great performance, but I just, you know, when we go through the set, I'll explain some of my mishaps. But it's, and I hate to be dreary. I'll try to. That's why I opened up with a Sky Rizzy joke, but it's very difficult for me to not be dreary today, because it was it felt almost like I choked. It felt like I got to a game 7, and then had a shitty game, like a media, like my team needed me to have 45. I had 50 or 60 in game 6 to send it to game 7, but in game 7. I had like 25 and 8, which is like a good game, but my team needed me, my team being me, needed, you know, 45 and 15, and I didn't deliver that. I think today I was just sort of coming to grips what my life is and will be without comedy. And a fan who was at the show last night for the second time brought friends and went out to drinks after with several people. She wrote me a message late last night because I made a joke about going to, like, her and her husband having a big party in the fall. And I said, well, I better catch on, or else I'm just going to be some random tall dude at the party. I want to bring up the clout of the party as a successful comedian, not just as some tall rando. And I was kidding, obviously, but she did take that partially to heart and said, remember, you're not a comedian. Like, it's not what you do, it's who you are. And you know, you're very funny, but, like, who you are is important, too. And it's in a way, it's weird to think that way, because my entire adult life, You know, I tell people, I have told people for many years, I do comedy instead of saying I am a comedian. Cause I'm like, well, I'm a comedian lawyer cause I do two jobs and they have equal shares in paying my bills. But comedy has been, and I don't know if this is sad or just whatever, but it's been the defining, the singular defining characteristic of my adult life. And I got really, really good at it and worked really, really hard at it. And I was able to contemplate a life without comedy a few years ago because that had taken a long time for me to be really disappointed in my career and really bitter. And then 2020 sort of turned it around and gave me this enormous jolt of hope and excitement. And that feels like, and the special was a recognition that I needed to deliver something big before maybe my star completely faded. Thank you, social media algorithms again. Damn it, I said I wasn't going to mention those. And I did it and couldn't use it. I mean, it'll be an album, but, you know, if it was an album, I would have done it myself. The goal of this was obviously a special. So I think the second taping will be the special, assuming there are no technical difficulties. And that's obviously a big assumption, but I think from what I'm told, the guy doing it was very, you know, was understood the flaws of the first one and was very diligent in making sure everything was going well. So I think it's going to come out technically sound, and I think there's a lot of great stuff on it. But a comedy album to me, or a comedy special, a great one, the level I need, can't be like an album where you're like, those five songs are good and I skip the rest. Like, you want a fully formed, polished, thematically strong product that really doesn't, you know, it sounds ambitious, but like Chris Rock's Bring the Pain has always been my model, my goal for an album or a special. And I think, looking at my work, Keep My Enemies Closer, probably my Bring the Pain, in terms of not a fucking blemish on that entire album. And there is just like, it's like haymaker after haymaker on that album. Thoughts and Prayers was really, really good and really, really strong. And you know, a longer set, a double album. And I thought the first taping of this was my best ever. It was my... whatever, it was that level where I was like, this is what I would want out as a special. It's nonstop, heavy punches to the funny bone, whether they be long stories or quick bits, everything is punching hard. And there are a lot of hard, funny moments in this special. A couple of ad-libs that I'm very happy with. A couple of things fell flat, like have never fallen flat. Like some tested, tried and tested lines fell sort of flat with this crowd, which was disappointing. But overall, I think I'm just sharing with you. You shouldn't listen to this when you get the special or whatever. Obviously, make your own judgments. Like I'm giving you the perspective of person who knows what a perfect set felt like and knows that it was not perfect. But let's do a recap of the day. So I had stomach trouble all day. I've never felt this physically uncomfortable the day of a show. And I was like, did I eat something wrong? And I was like, no, it was just nerves. So I kept mapping out the set, reading over my notes, trying to remember every beat. Sorry, I'm eating yogurt. I'm eating some yogurt for probiotics. I feel like that's going to be part of my new positive outlook on life, you know. I'm going to avoid antibiotics, do your own research, and upgrade on probiotics. So I've got raw kombucha, because my kombucha doesn't wear condoms, and like some Greek yogurt with like active cultures and whatever the fuck else diet people tell you gotta have for gut health. So, stomach's doing flips. And I knew I was in trouble, I think, because the righteous girlfriend, she doesn't listen to this fucking show, which I wouldn't either if I dated me. But she put on a dress that I'm not a particular fan of. And that's all I needed. I just became a sullen, miserable fucking mess for the last 4 hours I was home. And that's what, like, I didn't say it, but I was just like quiet and miserable. And that's, unfortunately, I feel like, that's sometimes how I can be. I have misery that I need to put somewhere. And then I was like, I don't like that dress. I'm going to be sulking and angry at my set now. It's so fucking dumb. That sounds psycho what I'm saying right now, but that is one of the reasons why I think comedy is just the way I do it, the way I feel I need to do it, makes it me good and it makes me miserable. So, you know, probably as good a reason, not being, an absurd douchebag. That, you know, it would be as good a reason as any to stop doing comedy if this is what it makes. But I'm just like, I don't like that. I didn't say anything. I'm not one of the, I don't walk around going, you're going to wear that? Like, I was just like, oh, all right. That's for what I don't know. I don't know why I'm like that. I think I just look for things. If I can't be negative, I find something that I can be negative about, even if it's not negative. So I make my way into the city. Reviewing my notes, walking around the Upper West Side looking for a coffee shop. The Upper West Side looks like shit. Man, New York, I don't know. Maybe New York City isn't coming the fuck back, because a lot of empty storefronts, there are a lot of traffic on like restaurant areas, but no crosstown traffic. Like, I was walking against the light basically the whole time, because it was like, it was a Saturday, like, it's 8 p.m. where you'd expect like a little buzz. But found a Starbucks, and first thing, when I got off the subway, a homeless man stopped me. He you know, when you have one of those like talks without, where he wants to keep it real and be serious, but he seemed like a normal guy, and he was like, oh, my birthday was May 8th, and I'm like, hey, fellow Taurus. And I told him, I said, I'm sorry, I don't have cash on me. I apologize. And he said, well, thanks for listening. And we walked our separate ways, and then I just said, fuck it, and went into a Bank of America and took $40 out and gave him $20 and said, good luck. And I thought, look at that good energy I'm putting out there before my special. Thou shalt not test the Lord thy God, okay? You got to know when the devil is tempting Jesus in the desert. You can't make bargains with the Lord, folks. And then I went into a Starbucks, and they were cleaning up already, but I was like, can I come in? And it was like 8:12. I was like, they were like, where the players dwell, and they were like, yeah, sure. And I went in, got a black coffee, a piece of coffee cake, because I'm a fucking 85-year-old man, and a water, and just started reviewing my notes. And they said, sir, we do close at 8:30, just to let you know. But I was like, all right, I already fucked up your evening enough. So I left at 8:29, you know, because I'm merciful. And I gave them the other 20 to their tip jar. And I just thought, fuck it. That's, you know, hey, you're, even these 15 minutes helped me out for show prep. So I go to the theater, the Triad Theater, and I walk in about 8:50 p.m., show's at 9:30. And there is a strong leak coming from the roof onto some of the seats in the front part of the theater. And I'm looking at this, and I'm going, like, I think they could see it. Usually I try to even have gallows humor, but I think the people at the theater and the tech guy could see, like, this guy is not, like he is crestfallen. He is, like, it got me, like, depressed, more depressed. And I was like, because it was raining, but they fixed it. But that was literally, I walked into the theater 40 minutes before showtime to see a pretty strong flowing leak from the ceiling, like somebody was pouring like Brita water out. But they turned off like part of the AC, and that dried it up, and everything worked. But obviously you don't want too many empty seats in the front of the theater for a special taping, but something had to go wrong, and it did. And then when I'm doing sound check and, you know, camera check around 9:10, the main camera almost fell off the balcony. and like it scared the camera guy because somebody had like repositioned it, and I was like, this isn't, you know, it started with me being just a fucking looking for something to gripe about, and then it was turning into a nightmare. So I go backstage and I'm reviewing my notes. I switch into my t-shirt and Pete shows up, Pete Dominic, host. We talk for a few minutes. He goes out and does about 12, 15 minutes to warm the crowd up. And then I go out there and, you know, crowd was nice. There were some empty seats up front, which is not great, but I started my set. Things were going well. Now there was a group in front. I believe it was a man who was a fan of mine. It looked like two generations. Like it looked like, I don't think they were father, like mother, father, daughters. I don't think that was the relation, but it was like an older guy. I think an older woman. And when I say older, I mean relative to the young women. Like, so 40s, two people in their 40s or 50s and like two young women. And there was like a lot of chit chat and nobody could hear it, but guess who could hear it? Me. And I was starting to sweat because that's what actually happens. Like I'm standing there going, okay, just keep mowing through the material. Good, good, good. Oh God. At some point, and like, I feel beads of sweat because I'm like holding in the desire to say, please stop talking. And that's causing me to be like more stressed. Because I'm like, I shouldn't say something, but is this going to be picked up on a mic? I'm starting to hear them. And they, you know, for about 10 minutes, they had kind of steady chatter. And one of the women was extremely a young, very, very attractive woman. And that's how dedicated, like, when it comes to my comedy, I do not see attractiveness, gender, anything. I just see ally or problem. And, you know, I basically stopped and said, hey, guys, it was like right before the Milli Vanilli bit. And I said, guys, if you could just, I can hear you up here. It's a special taping. So if you could just, you know, stop talking. Thank you. And that was it. That was the end of it. So that it worked. But it was like, you don't want to interrupt your flow and have stress and whatnot. So, you know, about... We're like 20 minutes in and it's like, we're going okay. It feels good. The big bits are still to come. I had some lines fall flat. I compared holy water losing to COVID in church, like having to switch up the dispensers because of COVID. I compared that to Thanos kicking the shit out of Hulk, which has gotten a laugh in so many rooms, but apparently I stumbled on the one audience in the world that did not understand an Avengers reference, which normally I'd applaud, but not on my special taping. Not when, because that wasn't like an ad-libbed line. That was like a tested line that has succeeded every time until that night. And I mean, there is only one moment of Daffy Duck crickets, and it was that line. Like, because I held for a beat, which was a big mistake. Like, I held because I was like, oh, they're catching up. No, they weren't. They just didn't think the line was funny. So hopefully we can cut that brief space and make it look like I was just moving along. Yogurt break. So, yogurt, not as conducive a food for podcasting. Gotta just swallow this cow cum and I'll be ready to do more podcasting. Hold on, listeners. So, you know, taping's going along. I'm feeling pretty good. I had to refer to my cheat sheet more than I wanted to, and I couldn't quite read it because I'm out of practice with wearing contacts right now, and there's gonna have to be some edits there. Like despite fucking up the first one, if they can make this second one clean and slick to cover up my expected errors, you know, a pause, a look down, things that can be cleaned up with crowd shots and stuff, I will, I'll consider debts forgiven. But some of the big bits really, really worked. I managed to do my Billions story on the fly. Like I didn't decide how I was going to. It's a two-part story, basically, involving my law professor from Georgetown. And I split it up, and it actually worked very well. And I kind of on the fly thought how to do it, how to state something, and it worked, which was good. That always feels good. That was towards the end. Also, I had a bit about woke mobs. Somebody warning me about the woke mob when there was an actual mob attacking the Capitol. And the line I have, but I didn't feel like the crowd would dig it. I took the measure of this crowd. The October crowd, it would have ripped. This one, it wasn't going to. But when I say I have a line that I came up with 2 days ago, which is, you think Emmett Till's last words were, well, at least they're not a woke mob. And I thought this crowd would have been like, ooh. Like they had that vibe, like that was going to be too far. And I'm not judging. That's a tough joke. Like, I don't mind if you don't find Emmett Till humor appealing, even though, of course, the joke is really about mocking the sensitivities of people who never stop complaining about the woke mob. But I get it. If you don't laugh, and I took the measure of the crowd and thought too much. So I just changed it to, you think Mitt Romney was running around on January 6th going, well, at least they're not a woke mob, and that got a laugh. So all good, you know, we got the laugh, but just I'm giving you the inside scoop on what the original line was. But things were going well. The crowd was very nice. They were pleasant. And then the big bit, there's a large racial chunk, and this half the special is about race and me and... There's a lot of really good lines. I had one ad lib about kink shaming, and I said, can we stop with a little shame, right? Why do we, some stuff should be shamed. And I go, why are we trying to get shame out of sex? And I think I tied it into the Catholic Church somehow. I'm like, I know they've done wrong, but like, hey, some shame actually kind of makes, isn't that what makes sex kind of like, it's a little naughty. So we kind of enjoy it more. I said, if no one had any shame about sex, we'd all be wrinkly old hippies fucking in a forest on an episode of HBO's Real Sex. Nobody wants to watch that. And that was like a completely ad-libbed bit, which worked. And overall, it was solid. And I bet you when I watch the footage 1 week or 9 years from now, I will be like, actually pretty good, because that's happened with multiple albums of mine where I was like, I don't know, that fucking suck. And then I watched or listened and or watched and was like, that was actually okay. You know what? Fucking not bad, sir. So I'm hoping for that. But the big mistake on my part was during the whole chunk of stuff about me dressing up for the web series Comedy Academy as various comedians of various ethnicities and races. The line, which I remembered perfectly and landed perfectly on the album, aka the first special, was people, you know, a guy asked me, he was like, dude, you did blackface? And I said, it's really half blackface, isn't it? Like, if we're being totally honest, no, half. I think we can call half at best, and it's not even really blackface, but I'll if you're willing to go to half, I'll take it. And the whole bit, I talk about it, so the title is implied, and it still works as a title because so much of the material is about my race and my face and whatnot. But my God, it was so good. That chunk, that whole, like, 20 minutes was really masterful on the first taping. And what happens to me, just some inside JL comedy baseball, what happens to me a lot of the time is I'll come up with an idea. And maybe it's podcasting, maybe it's just having a sharp comedy mind, maybe it's whatever muscles that I work a lot. I often can come up with a great version of a joke on the first try. And then the next five tries are me trying to remember that and fumbling it. And then by the time we get to a fifth, a sixth, or a seventh time telling a joke, we've perfected it and now have memorized and where I want it to go and what works. So if you're doing the math, this was my second time doing this large chunk. And it was not as tight. It was, it, for whatever, it just, I was too busy, you know, trying to at times remember what I wanted to say instead of just saying it, because there was like, oh God, I got to remember that line. I got to remember that line. But I forgot to say half blackface, the fucking title. Now, like I said, there's so much racial material and things that it could easily just be an implied title. I don't have to explicitly say it. But I wanted to explicitly say it. Like, I wanted to and meant to and basically remembered everything else on the bit except that. So that was one of the bigger disappointments for me. I woke up today on about 4 hours sleep and was like sweating because I was thinking about the fact that I forgot to say the title of the fucking track and album on the special taping. So overall, I think fans will be pleased. I don't think you're going to listen to this and go, oh, maybe it's keep my enemies closer level. Maybe it is, like, once we're all done polishing it up. But that first taping was above that. The first taping was an unprecedented level for me. And I hope you enjoy whatever comes of these two tapings. I am extremely grateful. It's really hard for me to say how grateful I am because I don't know how to, like, maybe make people understand or feel that. But, you know, as I've said, I'm at this weird point in my career where it's like, the silver lining to not having as big a career as I want is I get to actually really meet and appreciate fans on a much closer level than I might if I were doing, you know, 5 sold out shows at Gotham or Radio City Music Hall. It's of course for the career, that's what I want, but it also makes me feel like more of a disappointment, because I feel like I want to reward the commitment and the faith and the appreciation and the travel and the dollars of my real fans, whether they be 9 or 90 or 900. I want to reward, like, the better my career does, the better it is for fans of me who are with me and support me and show me appreciation and admiration and make me feel good about me and what I do. Like, so that's the irony. It's like, I almost feel like I'm letting fans down because if my career were better, it would be better for my fans. And now I just don't know where I go from here with comedy. I mean, obviously sign up for both of my Patreons, for Christ's sakes. I mean, I'm still doing those, but I have no gigs until July. Well, what the fuck am I saying? Why did I just say that? I'm in Sellersville, Pennsylvania. And that was the funny thing. This morning I woke up to 2 tweets that were just so perfect reminders of where I am in comedy. One tweet was like, JL, I haven't seen you in my feed for a long time. Hope it went well. Love your stuff. And I was like, right. Thank you, Twitter. Twitter algorithm, what a sick sense of humor you have. The day after I'm like despondent over my special taping, I get another reminder that Twitter's algorithm is fucking me extremely hard. Like, it was funny, like, I haven't gotten one of those tweets in like months, but I got one this morning. I got one this morning when I woke up saying, JL, where have you been? I haven't seen you in my feed for so long. Well, that's why I can't sell out 115 seat theater. It's not your fault. You might have been there if you had any idea. Like, I can't even get people, if I write, sign up for my newsletter, I don't even know if people see that tweet. So I can't be mad at somebody who doesn't see the tweet calling them to action. And then I had another tweet from somebody saying, hope it went well, and I'm so mad. I live near your next gig, but I'll be out of town. I'm not mad at this person. This is a real fan. You know, I believe that. But it's also one of those things like, of course, I at this point assume my fans cannot make my shows. That's how I stay sane. I assume you can't make it when I'm in your town. And if you show up while I'm in your town, pleasant surprise, everybody's happy. So that's how I woke up. But last night after the show, I went out for some drinks, said hi to some fans, some friends and fans who were at the bar near the place. It wasn't as amazing. I wasn't greeted with big applause like I was after October, which was fine. That would have been cheesy and annoying. But at the same time, I also thought, nor was I applause worthy. relative, you know, that was standing ovation level in October. This one was like, very funny stuff, sir. But said hi to various groups. I don't want to tell tales out of school, but, you know, I was getting eyeballed by, an attractive audience member, who then kept eyeballing the righteous girlfriend. And it was like, we're not doing this, just be respectful, But it was nice to just see some fans and some friends who I don't get to see that often. I mean, I communicate with a couple of friends very frequently, but don't see as much now that I'm not in the city. And then, we left and took a cab home. The righteous girlfriend treated me to a lift, and it started to rain when we got home, and I said, I'll take Cookie out. And this is where the evening took a bad turn. It started pouring, and the time we were in the elevator coming up and me getting Cookie and going back down, it had gone from a drizzle to a torrential downpour. And so Cookie could have helped me out. She hadn't peed in like 10 hours, so I knew she had to go. But sometimes she likes to go in dirt, obvious. I don't know if it's obvious, but she prefers dirt. She likes dirt as a landing place for her piss. But on rare occasions, I will walk her kind of under the parking lot is partially covered. So I will walk her to empty parking spaces, and on occasion, she will plop down and piss there. What do you think Cookie did? Do you think she helped me out at 2 a.m. during a monsoon while I'm contemplating the end of my comedy career? No. She just kept looking at me, and it's cute. If you're not me after last night's show, it's very cute what she does. She just kind of stops and looks at you like, can we go inside now? Have I walked around enough, sir? But I started going, give me a fucking break, Cookie. And she doesn't like the F word. It triggers her from her past. She is definitely, whatever abuse she was in. So I'm like, God fucking damn it. And I'm just muttering, you're fucking ruining my life. Like I said, from 5 p.m. until 2 a.m., my nerves, my attitude, my composure were shit. And so I'm like, she's dawdling. I try to walk her into a dirt area, getting wet, both of us wet. And she just looks at me and I said, oh, fuck off. And like stormed inside. She's staring at me terrified. We walk down the hallway. It's 2 a.m. I go in and I just declare, you got to take this fucking dog out. And then slam the door harder than I've ever slammed a door in my life. And, you know, if neighbors had complained, they would be completely right. And the RGF, annoyed but more understanding than she should have been, took Cookie out. Cookie peed with her because I said, Cookie's not going to pee with me. She's just going to stare at me like, you scare me, big person. And I went to sleep. I slept about 4 hours, woke up sweaty, thinking about the title. And then I looked, and Cookie had not gone to her bed last night. She usually she lies by me, and when the lights go out, she gets up and goes to her bed. But she laid next to me for the whole night. And I guess that was probably a combination of my big person is upset, so I'm doing this both for support and for self-preservation. I'm just going to stay here in case he needs to vent or is sad or angry. And that's why I'm a fucking dick, and that's why I should quit comedy, because the righteous girlfriend and the righteous Cookie are better beings than me, and provide more calm and more support than I reciprocate. And if that's what comedy does to me, if the pressure is that much, you know, it's, yeah, if I ever became the next fucking George Carlin or Richard Pryor or Dave Chappelle, these would all be folklore of like, he was such a maniacal, passionate comedian, like, and it would become a point of respect and admiration. Like, he was just, oh, you know, like the guy who never leaves the gym, and it's like, didn't his family miss him? Or like, you know what I mean? You never hear the other, you're just like, oh, well, the work ethic. But sometimes work ethic, you know, is masking other things or causing other things. And that's not how I should act. That's not a way to show love or appreciation. They were understanding. Maybe Cookie knew I had a comedy special as well, but they were, and Cookie's right in here right now. Just lying behind me, looking at me, wagging her tail, because she's a forgiving, kind creature that I'm a big fan of, and has been an invaluable companion these last couple years, especially always, but these last couple years especially. And so now it's just on to contemplating what I do with my career going forward. Obviously, if I look at the special edited and go, this is an Emmy and Grammy winning project, I will come back on this podcast and say, everybody, game back fucking on. Let's do this. Oh, Cookie just heard the F word, and she just made a gag face. She has this puke face when she's nervous. She looks like she's going to puke. She doesn't, but it looks like so. See, on cue, she heard the F word and got very upset. But I don't know. I don't know. That's the recap. That's everything that happened. Like I said, I started off with what I did today. I went to a movie, didn't help. I don't know what to do. Like at all with comedy. I love doing it. I love creating funny things. And just as an example, to bitch about some other algorithm besides Twitter, YouTube. So when I posted my Joel Osteen sketch in 2015, I had 2,000 subscribers, and that video had 10,000 views within a week. And it's now at like 60,000 total or 70,000 total. I have 65,000 subscribers on YouTube, and obviously many more social media followers than before. After a little less than a week, it has 3,000 views. So you do the math there. Does that make any sense? Is there any rhyme or reason to this? I accumulated a fan base 32 times bigger on YouTube and 40 times bigger on Twitter, and it yielded a very funny video, same sort of topic, and it's clocking in at 70% fewer views. You tell me if that makes sense. And that's what's frustrating, is you're no matter how good I can be, and unfortunately last night was not as good as I can be. It was as good as I could be yesterday, but it's not as good as I can be. October was as good as I can be under any circumstances. That was the best I can be. Last night was not that. Not for lack of trying, not for lack of effort, but it just wasn't. I put too much pressure on myself. I'm unable to kind of deal with my nerves at a certain level. And the more my career goes on, the more I need a silver bullet to save my career. So like this special, this second time doing a special felt like, okay, we're going to get this right. And that's why it has to be perfect and great. And it wasn't perfect. It's really good, I think, but it's not, I don't know if it's great. I'm hoping with editing, we can make a great product, but I will need some editing to make this better than very good. The first one, you could fucking put that out right now, unedited, and it would be a phenomenal, great piece of comedy work. But I just don't know where to go now. Like, wait, you know, you guys have heard me bitch and moan about so many of these things, but I cannot get an agent or a manager. I've chronicled for you all the ways I've tried. People contacting on my behalf, emails going unanswered, people saying, yeah, email me here, call me here, and then never replying after I do. People who have had relationships with me in the past in the business, not even responding to messages. So that's like shut out. Like that path is like shut out, which is bizarre, weird, frustrating, and upsetting, but it is. It's like the management agent class has decided I'm not worth a conversation, an email, a Zoom chat, a meeting, anything, a reply. So then we move on to, you know, hey, the special. Well, we're going to need some help, I think, if this is going to be a great special, because I think it was just a good set with some great, great moments, but that leaves the door open to rejection. Rejection that will hurt me, I should say. In other words, if they were to reject the October special, that wouldn't hurt me, because I'd go, oh, they're like, I could say with confidence, oh, the industry is fucking stupid and it's headed in a direction that I should just get out now, because why waste, like, my talent and effort is now wasted on an increasingly dumb industry. Whereas this special maybe is an A-, but that's room. That is room for critique. That is room for judgment, objective critiques, not just like, oh, we're not looking at this, you know. So, excuse me. But that's the rundown. That's what happened. So this is your episode for the week. I may do a bonus episode. Check out patreon.com/JLCovan. If you're a fan of the Trump stuff, that Patreon's going very strong. That's patreon.com/MPGA. If you're anywhere near Sellersville, Pennsylvania, which is in, which is between, I think, Allentown and Philadelphia, closer to Allentown, but it's between Philadelphia and Allentown. That is a week from today, Sunday the 22nd at 8 p.m. at the Sellersville Theater. I hear it's a very nice venue, so hopefully some of you can make it. If any of my Philadelphia area fans or Bethlehem Allentown fans listen to this, it'd be great if you could make it. And then after that, it's just going to be, I think, most likely, you know, keeping up with social media content, making videos, making podcasts, and working on, you know, the special, really, to see if we can edit this into something really good and maybe get somebody interested in it. And if not, hopefully this summer you will be able to purchase it or whatever. And that'll be hopefully fun for everybody. So, yeah, you had to expect this was not, this was going to be a post-mortem that would be, even if joyful, it would have been somber and reflective. It wouldn't have been like joyful, I fucking did it, suck my dick. It would have been, I did it, I'm humbled, I'm exhausted, thank you for your support. That would have been like the positive one. The negative one is really not too much of a difference in tone, but, you know, a little more pessimistic overall for my career. But as always, thank you for listening to this. If you're a Patreon, much appreciated. If you're not, that's okay too. If you came to the show, thank you very much. If you've come to any show of mine, thank you very much. Now I got to go walk this dog, who I got to be extra nice to today, because she, I forgot to mention. See, just like Half Blackface, I forgot the punchline of the cookie story. When I slammed the door, she immediately started pissing on the kitchen floor. So she was very scared. And, you know, I felt very bad after. And comedy ain't worth being gruff with your girlfriend or screaming at your dog. Comedy's supposed to be fun. And we'll see if it ever becomes fun again. So thank you guys. Enjoy your Sunday or Monday or Tuesday or 2023, whenever you listen to this podcast. Yeah, that's the postmortem. So if you were expecting totally happy, sorry to disappoint you. You got mostly unhappy. But the good news is probably never going to do a special again. So at least whether I continue comedy or quit, these moments should never happen again. And I'm including this fucking dreary podcast type episode. So that's it, guys. I appreciate you listening. Hopefully you found this at least enlightening, informative, or whatever, but not totally depressing. So I will see you next Tuesday.